Hello and welcome to The Blockchain and Us, where pioneers and thought leaders talk about their journey in blockchain technology, crypto assets, and the token economy. And I'm your host, Manuel Staggers. If you enjoy this podcast, please give it a top rating and review on iTunes, and feel free to follow me on Twitter at Manuel Staggers. This episode is brought to you by Crypto Storage. Crypto Storage offers a proprietary solution to enable professional storage of crypto assets. The storage is secure both physically and digitally on the highest grade hardware security modules with detailed configuration possibilities for individual-based access control. To learn more, visit www.cryptostorage.ch. My guest today is Tom Lyons. Tom is Executive Director of Research and Advisory at Consensus Switzerland and Chairman of the Communications Working Group at the Crypto Valley Association in Zug. Before he joined Consensus, Tom ran his own communications agency, specializing in thought leadership, content, and influencer marketing strategy and execution for clients in emerging technologies, fintech, and financial services, with a special focus on blockchain and decentralized technology. And now, to the interview. Hi, Tom, and many thanks for taking time today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Tom, you have a long background in communications in the financial sector, and now you're Executive Director of Research and Advisory at Consensus Switzerland. What do you do in that role?
So at Consensus, I'm involved in, I split my work up into three different areas. One part of it is I'm working on something called Consensus Research, which is an effort at Consensus to build up a research arm in questions about decentralization. So we're not talking about research into the blockchain technology. We're talking more the social aspect of blockchain. And at the Consensus Research, there's kind of two pillars. We're looking to do data-driven research into the early blockchain ecosystem and also to do kind of thought leadership into questions of decentralization. So that's one part of my job. I'm also involved on a Consensus project working on the European Union Blockchain Observatory and Forum, which is a two-year European Commission project to explore the blockchain ecosystem in Europe and to do thought leadership and to kind of make a forum for exchanging ideas among experts and also the general public in Europe. And last but not least, since there's only three of us in Consensus in Switzerland, I'm sort of the de facto Consensus rep here. You know, and we're not highly active in the Swiss market right now, but I do some community stuff and fly the flag.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. In terms of thought leadership, you mentioned that a few times. What is your function there?
Well, thought leadership is, to be honest, a term that I've been using professionally for a long time and I've never liked, but it's the one that we use. And basically, thought leadership is simply, writing about ideas that are pertinent to whatever business or whatever enterprise you're in. So my role is to... both at the Consensus Research and at the Blockchain Observing Forum, is to create content, either by writing, by editing, editing in the sense of creating, you know, getting ideas together, finding people to interview, working with people. It's just putting together and getting out good content on a lot of the important ideas around blockchain and consensus.
I'd like to speak a little more about that whole idea of communications, marketing, and thought leadership, because, I mean, that's what you're a pro in. And because I also think that whole area is quite hard to understand and grasp. I mean, some people might think that communications is about sending out press releases to journalists or, you know, sending emails on LinkedIn about ICOs or writing on Medium or having a Telegram or Twitter channel. And posting news there. But in your view, what is good communications?
I mean, at the heart of what people like myself do is actually quite simple. It's simply storytelling. And it depends, storytelling for in different contexts and for different reasons. And any good communications will tell a story of some kind. And that's really the skill you need to be you need to be the most in touch with. Now, there are different kind of stories out there. There's true stories, there are fake stories, there's propaganda, there are inspiring stories, there's all sorts of different ways to approach it. But at the end of the day, that's pretty much what it's all about.
But with consensus, what kind of stories do you tell about that company?
So there's two major things going on with a company like Consensus, but I would probably say with any blockchain effort at this point, right? There's two things happening. We're developing a new technology. Okay, so there are a lot of stories to tell about this technology itself. And blockchain technology is a little bit different than other kinds of important emergent technologies or technologies we've seen emerge in the past, because it has a large social component to it. It has aspirations to change society. So there's a lot of stories about how and why blockchain works, why it's important. That's one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it is we're all trying to build businesses. So there are stories about our businesses, our efforts, how we work, what we're doing, and why, that you want to be telling.
Mm-hmm. How do you go about, you know, finding the right narrative to, you know, for those different stories?
I mean, that's an interesting question. So I worked for, you know, long before I came to Consensus, I worked for many years in corporate communications, and that's basically telling the story of a company, okay?
But sorry to interrupt there. I mean, the story about a company, right? I mean, you could have the founder's journey, or you could have this company does X and that's why it's better than the other companies. And then you have something maybe deeper where you say, look, there's something very important happening here in the world, and our company is at the forefront of this development, something like that. I mean, there's many, many ways to find stories to tell about a company. So I'm just wondering which ones you focus on with, in your work.
Sure. It all has to do with who you're talking to, number one, and what you're trying to say. And I think one of the things that I, and also people who do what I do well, have to do, or often find themselves having to do with people that who want to tell their story, is to set the context. Because a lot of people somehow forget that. Now, for me, it's second nature, right? To think about, okay, who are we talking to? What do they know? What do they not know? And, you know, trying to find a way to make this relevant and important to them. And a lot of people I notice who maybe don't come from that way of thinking or don't have that experience tend to jump into the middle of what they're trying to say and throw it at you. And I'm always, so I guess my commandment number one is understand who you're talking to and give them a reason to be interested in what you're saying. So that's all about context.
Is there an example that you can give?
Well, the best example right now, of course, maybe we'll talk about this in detail, is the whole blockchain story. Right, because you're talking about this wild new technology, which once you get it, okay, you can understand why it could very well be very important. But it's basically solving a lot of problems that most people don't know they have. So, you know, how are you going to make that interesting to them, right? So, what's the context of this whole thing? I mean, when you start talking about blockchain, we start talking about, you know, theories of money. We start talking about exchanges of value, transactions. You can talk about the plumbing of the financial system. All fascinating stuff, but not stuff that most people have ever really thought about or really cared about.
Right. And again, like you said before, right, who do you talk to? I mean, if you speak about, you know, reinventing the plumbing of the financial system, somebody in finance may find that interesting or may not want to hear about it, right? And so, but I think the main focus with a lot of the blockchain narratives that I observe out there are really about explaining this technology to people who may not already know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, how do you do that best?
So, of course, that's the question that I've been struggling with for the past 3 years or so since I fell down the blockchain rabbit hole. But I would say the way I like to approach now when I talk to somebody who's maybe doesn't have a technical background or hasn't really come across blockchain before is to say, look, this is a technology that allows people who either do not know each other or who do know each other but don't trust each other, perhaps because they're competitors or even enemies, it allows them to agree on and share information directly with each other without having to rely on some sort of trusted third party. And it's actually the agree on part that I think is the most important part. Because we've been able, through the internet and various other communications means, to share information for quite a long time. But in order for strangers or adversaries to actually be able to agree on information and use it in a trusted way, you've, before blockchain, had to find some sort of third party, some sort of authority to keep and verify and share the information for you. And this is, I mean, this has worked for a very long time, but it can lead to certain kinds of problems. With blockchain, you can do this directly through the technology and directly there's means in the technology to come to consensus on information, and means that the technology gives you to save this information in such a way that you know that it can't be changed later. So nobody can really cheat in such a system, but you don't need a third party to do it for you.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, do you think that's a narrative that's easy to understand?
I think when I get this far, if the person is still listening, then I try to get to the second part, is why does that matter? Mm-hmm. Because that's obviously the real kicker. And if the person does seem to continue to be interested, then I'll say, look, this doesn't sound like much on the surface of it when you talk about it that way. Basically, we're talking about a brand new database technology, a brand new accounting technology. So that doesn't sound very exciting. But it turns out if you can share trusted information, you can start to do some very interesting and a lot of people think very important things. Just to give a couple of examples, if you have shared trusted information, you can have money without banks, which is the first use case for blockchain through Bitcoin. And you can do financial transactions without intermediaries. But you can also do things like build systems where an individual can get more control over their personal data and their personal reputation online instead of having to rely on a Google or a Facebook. You can do things like build, you know, large global direct peer-to-peer marketplaces where people buy and sell and exchange things directly between each other without having to use an Amazon or an eBay. So making Amazons and eBays without Amazon and eBay. You can do things like set up platforms where you have true sharing economies. So Ubers and Airbnbs without Uber and Airbnb. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, there's a number of reasons why that could be interesting. Number one is, if you get rid of middlemen, then you're going to reduce costs because there's not a cost there. There's nobody in the middle taking a fee. But also, if you look at these broad-based direct peer-to-peer marketplaces, they tend to be much more inclusive. So it's easy to get onto them. So it's a broader base of people that can use it. And we're talking about whether in developed parts of the world, or what's very interesting with blockchain is the way it could potentially give access to global markets to people who are right now not banked or just really out of the whole global system.
Mm-hmm. How do you usually go about explaining what Consensys does?
Here too, I have to split it into two parts. Okay, so Consensys the business is today, I think it's fair to say, probably the largest blockchain focused company in the world. We've got, at last count, over 800 people in 28 countries around the world, and we're focused on building decentralized applications as well as products and services and infrastructure almost exclusively on the Ethereum platform. So it's kind of like a huge, we call ourselves a venture studio. So one way to look at it is like a very large venture capital firm, except it's not like a VC fund. The projects we get behind are actually tend to be much more closely integrated into the company than in a typical VC fund. But we find, incubate, grow, and bring to market a lot of projects that are doing interesting decentralized applications on Ethereum for all sorts of use cases, from financial use cases to energy to entertainment to supply chain to you name it. But we also have an arm that does consulting. We have an educational arm. So we're doing those kind of services. We do direct investments. There's something called Consensys Capital, which does investing into companies, or also kind of also brings in and incubates projects that may not be part of the ConsenSys family yet. And ConsenSys also does a lot of stuff on the Ethereum infrastructure. So we do a lot of open source projects. These are not generally not-for-profit initiatives of ConsenSys that are building out developer tools for Ethereum or, you know, we do MetaMask, which is an Ethereum browser, that kind of thing. So that's the one side of the equation. To me, the other pillar, and this is a very personal take on ConsenSys, is it's one of the largest and greatest experiments in decentralization inside any organization that you'll ever come across. So we run ourselves, I mean, we walk the walk and talk the talk, or at least we try to inside ConsenSys. It's a decentralized organization on a large scale. I don't have a boss. We're allowed to self-organize, and it's something you have to see. And have to experience. It's a fascinating experiment.
And certainly a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. I mean, you know, I think a lot of times when I mention to people about a decentralized organization, or I say we're self-organizing, I say, well, I don't have a boss. And well, I can, you know, I have a lot of latitude to choose my team and to change teams and get involved in projects. And everyone thinks, boy, now there, right, is a ticket to do nothing and get paid. Hmm. My experience so far with myself and with a lot of the people I deal with, it's been the opposite. I've been taking on too much. You know, there's so many fascinating things going on, and I want to be a part of this, and I want to be a part of that. And I think most of the people in the company are probably the same way. So the real issue is the discipline to focus. I would say my first 5-6 months full time, that's been probably my number one takeaway.
How did you manage that to focus?
Over the last 4 to 6 weeks, I've been pruning. I've been pruning my own little portfolio. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess one thing that's interesting that's probably been helpful for me is that I was on my own for 8 years. So I had a small little communications agency, basically a freelancer plus a network thing. And I had to be very self-directed. So inside ConsenSys, it's kind of like I have my little projects and my little clients inside. But you have to, I have to keep an eye on my portfolio and what I promise people. Because the worst thing to do is to promise something and not be able to follow up.
Is there a vision or an overarching vision at ConsenSys?
Absolutely. So ConsenSys is a very idealistic place. And I use that word carefully because that can sound a bit, off-putting. But there's a large streak of idealism all through the whole blockchain industry. It's one of the things that struck me right away when I first got involved. And there's this whole idealism and vision around decentralized structures, decentralized economic, social, and political structures that could be supported by blockchain. And ConsenSys has a very clear vision to support that. Okay, yes, we're Ethereum-focused, but we want to build up the apps and the infrastructure to support decentralized markets, decentralized social structures, decentralized socioeconomic structures, do it in a decentralized way because we think that there's a lot to be said for that. We think that there's that in many cases it's something the world probably needs and certainly could profit from.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been doing this at ConsenSys Switzerland?
So I got involved in ConsenSys actually last August, so August 2017, but only part-time. So they were a client of mine for a while. And I joined full-time January 1 of this year.
I mean, you said you joined about a year ago, right? So, but that vision probably existed before that already. So I'm wondering, if you have a company that's decentralized in the way that ConsenSys is, and people are spread over so many locations and countries, how do you make sure that everybody's on the same page in terms of vision?
No, that's an excellent question. It's a central question to these kind of organizations. Inside ConsenSys, we have I have discovered an incredible culture of sharing information. So we have a lot of online tools. We have Slack and various other tools where people are very, very community oriented. And I think that's a function of the kind of people who are attracted to a place like ConsenSys. And I think it's a function of the fact that we are spread all over the world, because not only is ConsenSys present in like 28 countries or something, but it's a remote first company. So of those 800 or maybe it's even 900 by now people, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the majority of them, or at least more than half of them, work remotely anyway. So it's all these sort of little, you know, little nodes, which kind of sounds blockchain-like, doesn't it? Little nodes all over the place, you know, doing the work. So we're very much geared towards sharing information, towards various community channels. There's a lot of video chats and video calls. We have company-wide calls. We, you know, we do a lot of that. So there's that. Obviously, there's material in that you get that you can make use of. And there's the public-facing Consensus Media, which is our thought leadership arm. And I have to say, I think it's excellent. And, you know, not only can we internally read that, but externally as well, it's all there. So a lot of we do a lot of publishing about what we're up to. There's that. And then this company is very much representative of its founder, of Joe Lubin, who founded it, and he's very active. He gives a lot of talks, and he's on YouTube, and you can get a good sense rather quickly if you look for it for what he's thinking. And I think the a lot of us, I guess we wouldn't be there if we didn't kind of be on the same page as that. So those are the kind of ways. I haven't necessarily had issues or saw a lot of issues internally where we are in terms of sharing this vision. I think you might get into, you know, there's other aspects where you talk about, you know, sharing information specific to a certain project or stuff like that, where you could think in a large decentralized organization that could be an issue. But to be honest, when you're on a project, you're dealing with a finite group of people. So then it becomes quite easy to share.
Mm-hmm. I sometimes speak with companies who say, oh, you know, we need a stronger vision, or we need to be visible, and we need to make sure people get us right away when we tell them what we do in an elevator pitch. How important do you think that is in this whole blockchain field?
It's important in any field. When I was a communications consultant, I'd go in to talk to people and I'd say, you're about to pay me a whole bunch of money. Well, it wasn't even that much. But anyway, you're about to pay me a whole bunch of money for me to write you one page. Okay? What? Well, but what we're going to talk about for wherever the workshop is or however long it takes is to get you a good short, what they used to call a slogan, mm-hmm. to get you a one sentence, to get you a one paragraph, your elevator pitch, and to get you a one page description
something
of what
like
you do.
Something like a mission statement.
Like a mission statement. Yeah. But one that covers everything you want to do or mm-hmm. you want to say and all the audiences you're talking to. That's not easy. If you get that, you're off to the races. Then you can start building out from that. So I spend a lot of time with people working on basic messaging, and it can be very interesting. I mean, you know, you talk to you talk to developers and technology types sometimes, and you say, okay, so what does your app do? And you start getting all this techno speak back. You know, well, it's got to improve consensus mechanism in order to, you know, do with the API. And then I said, what does it do? Well, you know, we've got, you know, you double the speed. And then I said, what does it do? You know, and try to get it back towards talking about, you know, the function and purpose. I mean, what I just said was a bit exaggerated, because there are plenty of technologists who are extremely eloquent about what they do. But sometimes you get this with projects and startups, you know, it's hard to take that step back and look at the purpose. And it's a more difficult process than people think. I mean, I've done these workshops and you know, I once went to a workshop. And I said, you know, I'm here, I'm a communications consultant, and my qualification for this job is that I'm dumber than most trees.
Okay, what's that mean?
And what it means is I'm here to ask very simple, naive questions. That's what it means, you know. And I said, what? And I said, no, okay, that's exaggerated, but I'm here to ask you very simple questions and to not know anything. And that's where you have to start.
And then?
And then you start, and then usually it's good. I mean, I like to talk to people, you know. It depends how the conversation goes, but if you're getting stuck, then I'll say, okay, if we can't get right to the heart of it, then tell me what are your favorite, you know, what are your important themes in your work? You know, what are the subjects that surround this thing you're doing that you find important? So that's one of them. Or we can talk about you know, if they're really product oriented, I'll say, well, what's your product and why did you make it? Aha, okay. And then it, you know, goes back to that. So there's different ways in, but you're trying to get to some basic messages that somebody from the outside would understand.
I mean, I'm quite sure that many of these goals that people have and, you know, visions that they, what they want to do are quite similar, right? They want to be thought leader in the space and cutting edge technology and always putting the, you know, client at the center or things like this, maybe in the financial sector. But how do you differentiate between different offerings?
Well, that's also a very good question. There's different ways to think about that. First of all, you often have this problem, and I see this problem a lot in blockchain right now, mm-hmm. that we have so many startups and so many people coming, you know, projects that are dealing with the same use case, right? And sometimes I feel sorry because, you know, somebody will come up with this idea. So I've got this amazing idea for this use case, and I have to keep it to myself that there's already, you know, 10 others doing the same thing. So there's that part of it. But also outside of blockchain, this idea of how do you differentiate is really important. And that's one of the things you need to concentrate on. It, to be honest with you, there are cases when you don't. There are simply cases when you cannot. And in such a case, I say, that's fine. Then we won't differentiate on the offering. We'll differentiate on the way you present it, on being trustworthy, you know, maybe... You know, it's one thing if five companies are doing the same thing, but who's doing it well or the best or in a way that somebody would be interested in. So, you know, let's just be straightforward and believable and honest about what we're doing. And maybe that'll help differentiate us. So it depends. But you do try to look for the thing that is different. And obviously, you would have thought that the people developing the product at the beginning would have been thinking about that. And sometimes they are and sometimes they aren't.
What's your verdict there in the blockchain space? Do you think people think about those things or not?
Well, I've seen everything so far. I mean, I think, like I said, there's a lot of people popping up with, you know, they're very enthusiastic about their use case, and there's going to be other ones, you know, doing the same thing. Other times you come across interesting twists on it. Right now in terms of blockchain infrastructure, we're seeing a lot of people working on blockchain basics and taking different tacks. So it's really a case by case basis.
You know, having that message is one thing, but then there's communications, there's marketing, there's thought leadership, there's advertising. I mean, how do you use those things to get that message out?
So I've been using this awful term thought leadership all these years because it does encapsulate one basic difference and one thing that I've been thinking about in my work for quite a while. So I would put it this way. In our world today, okay, almost everything we do and almost everything that a company does or that a business does is somehow tech related, okay? And because you know, software is eating the world. There's just doesn't seem to be any doubt about that. So it's somehow technology related. So, and technology is complex, okay? And these technologies we're building, whether it's blockchain, whether it's artificial intelligence, whether it's all the various different kinds of technologies surrounding all the data we're producing these days, not even to talk about biotech, which is a whole nother subject. So all these technologies are complex, and they tend to have a real sort of claim to be able to transform large parts of society, okay, and how we do things, okay? So all of a sudden, you're into a realm of ideas, okay? You have ideas going on that have to do with this complex technology and how it works and what it's going to do to your life, and you have ideas about how the world is going to be changed, okay? Now, I don't think this was necessarily the case in the past. I mean, obviously, when we had, you know, when the railroads came in, let's say, or when automobiles came in and things are, you know, and you know, we had mobility and we had communications technologies, things were changing and changed dramatically. But I mean, the speed and the magnitude of the change, in my opinion right now, is much more than we've ever seen, and it's only getting faster. So you have right now in a lot of this kind of world, you're dealing in a world of ideas. And thought leadership is about explaining those ideas and and exploring them, right? You see this in blockchain all the time. So you can do marketing and you can, you know, try to get your story out in terms of you know, your product and what you do, or you can try to get it out in terms of why you do and why you do what you do and why it matters. And that's the difference between, to me, between communications and marketing and this thought leadership thing. Mm-hmm.
What kind of channels do you use?
All the standard ones. I mean, we're living in an age right now of almost paradoxically, with all our video stuff gone, this is an age of words. Okay, this is a great age to be a writer, great moment to be somebody who likes to write. It's fantastic. We have all the blogs and we have all these different platforms and, you know, Twitter and all this stuff. Yes, you have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of stuff on video. You have YouTube, but most YouTube videos in our space are people talking, right? So it's all about ideas and words. And that's, you know, those are the channels.
So Medium, LinkedIn.
Medium, LinkedIn. I mean, Medium's great. LinkedIn, whatever little blog you have. Now we have all the chat channels going on, the social stuff. Yeah. I mean, I'm personally, but this is just me, you know, from where I come from, I'm personally attracted to more towards actual writing, you know, to short and long form writing as opposed to social. But then again, I'm just old school.
Well, I don't know. I think many more people read these long articles than we think. You know, I mean, I made lots of videos and there were always people who said, your videos are way too long. Nobody's going to watch an hour of an interview. But you know what? Some people watched it and they watched all of it and really liked, you know, some parts that maybe happened toward the end of the interview. And so you'll always have somebody looking at it and appreciating it as opposed to only, you know, the very short snippets.
I agree 100%. But even if it's short form stuff, you know, there's just, you know, people are reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think the traditional channels, you know, of marketing and advertising, do you think they still work today?
If I'm not mistaken, if you look at the studies, they actually still do.
Let's take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. Crypto Storage is part of the Crypto Finance Group, providing services for professional financial intermediaries and therefore bridging the gap between traditional markets and blockchain technology. The storage solution offered by Crypto Storage raises market standards by introducing a new security paradigm, which features two layers of dedicated and redundant hardware devices. This setup allows for a dedicated, independent, and highly flexible multi-signature framework. All transactions can be independently reviewed and approved on a dedicated tamper-proof hardware. The hardware security module, the tamper-proof signing devices, and the tailored software solution are all developed by leading Swiss providers with vast experience in finance and IT security. To learn more, visit www.cryptostorage.ch.
If I'm not mistaken, if you look at the studies, they actually still do. To a certain extent. But I don't think that's applicable to the blockchain world right now. Another thing we're dealing with in blockchain is
do you mean it's not applicable?
Because we're not consumer facing yet.
Got it.
Okay. We're not, you know, we're building something. I mean, the main community right now that we're talking to is each other, okay, which is important, right? And to the important, what, you know, the word I hate, but I use stakeholders, governments and investors and that kind of thing. But we're not public or consumer facing yet. And where we are public facing, it's, in my opinion, for the wrong reasons. It's all the ICOs and cryptocurrency stuff. It's not the technology. That will change.
Is there maybe a new kind of engaging people and getting them excited on the horizon for this technology?
The blockchain idea and blockchain technology, at least in theory, can let us set up a lot of new paradigms in advertising as it does in most other things. And again, we're talking about moving from centralized sort of push advertising, like your traditional television or radio or whatever it is, to more decentralized models and more direct peer-to-peer models. And that can get very, very interesting. I mean, we sort of have that now, or people think they do, because we have all this data mining and all this, you know, crazy... all this crazy online advertising things going on with Google, et cetera, and you know, targeted advertising based on whatever data they've stolen from you. So that's the one thing. In the blockchain world, I think the idea is to be able to move to much more of an equal playing field, let's say, or a level playing field between the advertiser and, let's call it, the advertisee. Okay, and this gets into the whole idea of self-sovereign identity and having the individuals more in control of their personal data, such that you can set up systems where you basically negotiate with an advertiser and, you know, say, look, I'm willing to give you my information for maybe you charge them for it, or, you know, you have it's more of a two-way discussion, because it's not like advertising is a priori bad, right? In my personal opinion, what is a priori bad is just sucking up all sorts of information about whatever targets you're looking to advertise to and abusing that information. But if it's something that I'm interested in, or there's other sort of structures where I can advertise what I want to be advertised about and willing to make choices about the information I share, then I think that's fine. In fact, it could be very, very useful to me as a person. So I think we're starting to look towards building those kind of structures. And again, we get back to this blockchain idea of trusted shared information without intermediaries. You can start to look at those kind of systems, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I'd like to speak about a slightly different topic, which is the place that we're in currently, which is Switzerland, because Consensus is based in New York, I think, right?
Yeah, the main office is in Brooklyn.
The main office, right. But you're in Switzerland. So how come?
Well, I'm in Switzerland personally because I can be. And if you can be, you should be, as far as I'm concerned when it comes to Switzerland. Now, I was born and raised in the United States in New York City, but my mother's Swiss, and so I have a dual citizen, and I came here 25 years ago. So I didn't come to Switzerland for Consensus. But I was very happy to be able to work for them when they're here. Consensus actually has a kind of a history with Switzerland that a lot of people aren't necessarily aware of. So it's technically it's a Swiss company. Also, Consensus AG is registered in Zug in Switzerland. It's the holding company.
Okay, interesting. And I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. And it's very much connected with the whole Ethereum, founding of Ethereum, the Ethereum Foundation, which is also here in Switzerland. So the Consensus history with the country, you know, you could say it kind of goes back to the founding of the Ethereum Foundation here. And for various reasons, we haven't been particularly active in Switzerland. There's actually three of us. So you're talking right now to one third of Consensus Switzerland.
Okay, cool. Do you think Switzerland is a good place for blockchain companies?
I think it's a fantastic place for blockchain companies. It's not perfect, but it's fantastic. And there's a lot of reasons for that.
Like what?
Okay, so there's... Here again, there's two things I'd like to concentrate on. One is Switzerland is a pretty good place, in many ways an excellent place to start a blockchain business. That's because you have a relatively blockchain-friendly government, certainly in the city and canton of Zug, but also in the rest of Switzerland. They're interested in this technology. They want to support it. The Swiss economics minister recently came out and said that we're going to build Switzerland into crypto nation. Zug has been known for quite a long time as Crypto Valley. It has an extremely high number of blockchain startups. It's the home of an extremely high number of ICOs, but it also has a growing and very interesting ecosystem around blockchain in terms of blockchain expertise, whether it's legal or tax or marketing. We have great universities who do a lot of interesting stuff with blockchain, the ETH, Lucerne University of Applied Sciences. So in my opinion, in Switzerland, you probably have the best mix of government support, regulatory certainty, and developed ecosystem that you're going to find anywhere else in the globe. Some places are maybe a bit more progressive on the regulatory side, or a bit more, you could call them permissive. Some places may have a larger ecosystem. But if you want the whole package in one sort of area, in one self-contained area, you can do a lot worse than coming here. And also, I mean, it's Switzerland has been, people forget this, but Switzerland has been a very good place for high tech for a very long time to build, you know, this is not the only high tech industry we have, right? And so it wins awards every year for the most innovative nation in the world. And yeah, it's got good business reasons. Taxes are low, salaries are high, which is good if you're getting them, not so good if you're paying them. So it's got a pretty strong mix, I would say. But really, in the blockchain story, really it's about how early Switzerland got involved and how much it's been behind it.
And certainly, there's a lot of blockchain companies here.
Oh yeah.
So I'm just wondering, you know, again, if you put on your communications hat, how do you see them do in terms of communications?
I think there's a very active community. I mean, we have a lot of meetups. People get together. It's a rather social world, even here in Switzerland. And I don't think it's any different than any place else, but I think people are very... I mean, what has impressed me in this whole world since I got involved in it is the degree to which people are interested in sharing information and talking to each other and discussing what they're doing and, you know, meeting up and getting together and connecting. And there's... You know, that's really remarkable when you think about it. And it has to do with the fact that we're a new kind of movement and you know, people are eager to connect with other people, like-minded people. And it has to do with the fact that there's a large open source history to this technology. So there's that kind of ethos is kind of part of blockchain anyway. But it's remarkable, you know, how you have this exchange going on. You know, I mean, I worked in banking for a long time and it wasn't like that.
If you compare what companies focus on, right, or on the stories that they tell about themselves, do you see a difference in Switzerland compared to other locations maybe in the world?
I mean, you could make a case that there's less, maybe a stretch though, but you could make a case that we have less of that sort of, you know, rah-rah, ICO, you know, hype thing going on, and that projects based here tend to be more sort of matter of fact. But I don't know if that would, you know, that would stand examination. But yeah, I think maybe there's that. There's certainly, it's not a culture where you make that kind of noise, as I've seen in conferences in New York and other places, and you know, it's different kind of things going on.
There's actually a reason why I was asking that question, because if you look at, you know, the way the press talks about cryptocurrencies, there's certainly a lot of scary news, right? Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And I recently spoke to somebody from a news portal right here in Switzerland with financial news, and he said it's mostly the mainstream press. You know, they cling on to all kinds of sensational news to get clicks and to get views, and that's what they need. And cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin and all that lends itself to that. So I'm just wondering, you know, how do you take this blockchain narrative about the importance of this technology, and how do you make it stronger so it can maybe override all the clickbait and all the sensational news out there?
So, I mean, that is a problem, first of all, right? And I mean, I can almost understand it. Here I come, like we talked about before, with my blockchain story. Well, we've got this fancy new database technology, and we're going to make, you know, shared and trusted information. And on the other hand, you know, the editor at the local newspaper is seeing all this stuff about Bitcoin and ICO frenzy and dark web. I mean, what are you going to choose? Okay. I think personally that the tack you have to take, certainly in a place like Switzerland, is to say, look, it may not seem very sexy right now, but we are starting to build a brand new global industry, okay? The Web 3.0 blockchain industry, okay? And it would probably be a good thing for Switzerland to be a leader in this industry, the way it has become a leader or has become very, you know, globally involved in industries from finance to pharmaceuticals to high-tech manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So we're building this important new industry. Let's not miss the boat. Forget the cryptocurrencies. Forget the ICOs. You know, let's take a look at the fact that we happen to be early in and we should stay. That's how I would pitch an editor.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we had this conversation a few weeks ago, you and me, where we said, okay, that's great. That's a nice story. And it's, you know, it's a good approach. But let's, you know, think a little bit bigger. Let's say we are now driving in third gear or something, and let's shift to fifth or sixth gear. So how would you take that narrative and supercharge it?
Now you put me on the spot. My first instinct, to be honest with you, is to say we have to wait until we have to wait until we have some national champions. We have to wait until we can show stuff. We have to start talking about jobs. I mean, yeah, this is not very, very sexy stuff. Or we have to wait until we have some use cases that start to happen. Now, for example, one interesting thing happened yesterday. So yesterday, they announced in Zug that they had the first blockchain-based e-voting. Okay, now voting and Switzerland go along very well together. Okay, it's an important subject here, right? Direct democracy and all this other stuff. So, you know, all of a sudden we're having this new kind of voting. Again, it's not super sexy on the surface, but you can start saying, look, these things are starting to happen, okay? And what's it going to mean for you as a citizen? Okay, all of a sudden, if you take it to its logical conclusion, we can bring direct democracy to the next level with you know, functioning, viable, decentralized e-voting systems where you can really vote not just like we do here in Switzerland every 3 months, but maybe, who knows, every day on important issues facing you, okay? And you can trust what's going on and you can have much more transparency in the government. So you start to get those kind of things. I have high hopes for blockchain use cases in local communities, loyalty points kinds of things. The Swiss really like, you know, clubs and these kind of things, or Vereine, right? And also that kind of stuff. And
associations,
right? Swiss like associations. They like, you know, they like self-organizing kind of things. And obviously you can use blockchain to really support those kind of efforts and bring transparency and trust and efficiency to these kinds of things. And also the whole idea of loyalty points of supporting communities with basically with their own kind of, I mean, a loyalty point is nothing other than a currency. And I have high hopes that when you start to see decentralized structures that function, that are useful in small communities, that people will get used to it, will see it, will find it important, and they'll say to themselves, well, if I can have a flat, horizontal, decentralized, I mean, they won't use it in those terms, but they'll say, if, you know, if this kind of thing works for my community, this kind of decentralized structure works here, why wouldn't it work for my company? And then, if it works in my company, why not in my country?
Mm-hmm. But it seems to me you always have to let people discover that on their own. I mean, I think people have to, and that's very strong, I believe, with this whole technology, people have to experience it and try it on their own.
Yep.
And that's why I like what you said, you know, start small, start in a community, have a small win, and then build from there.
I mean, the challenge we face in the blockchain world right now is simply we don't have that much to show, okay? I don't think that's a problem. We're still in early days, okay? You have to have something to show. Now, when I go and tell people I'm a storyteller and I do all this other kind of stuff, it starts to sound like you're a spin doctor or a propagandist. But don't forget, the absolutely best story in the world is a true one. So when it's there and it works and it's useful, okay, then we'll have something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Let's say there was a startup and they have a product and it's kind of working and they want to take it to the next level and tell the world about it. So how would you say they should go about that?
Well, theoretically, right, it should actually be no different than any other kind of product marketing, because theoretically, you don't necessarily need to know that there's a blockchain behind it. In fact, if we do our job well, nobody will know, but they'll see the difference, okay? It'll be cheaper, it'll be more direct. Let's say you build a some sort of peer-to-peer marketplace, right? Where people are dealing directly with each other, and there's a reputation system in there that kind of works, and there's a, you know, you can do these transactions in a frictionless way, and you start to see that happen, all right? I mean, that's a story that will resonate. So that's what you're touting. That's what you're talking about. You're not telling them it's a blockchain. I mean, I wouldn't tell anybody to go run out, if you have a consumer facing blockchain based project, to go run around and say it's blockchain, because it'd be like, what's that? Okay. Tell them, you know, there has to be something better and more secure about it. Now, the one thing that I'm very personally keen on, and where I sometimes wonder why there isn't much more talk of this, is the whole idea of data privacy. You know, I mean, because that's one thing we can offer in this world that that I think is extremely important. And people don't still, despite Cambridge Analytica and all this other stuff, I don't think people are still necessarily aware of the extent to which they're being profiled and how unnecessary and potentially dangerous that is, you know. And that's a hard story to tell. But if we can start to show, you know, show functioning self-sovereign identity, you know, where we have control of your own identity and stuff like that. Long story short, okay, when we figure out how to get, how people can get paid to watch ads, this thing is going to take off like a rocket.
Okay, so appeal to people's self-interest, maybe that's one thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in one instance, yes, but it's also fairer.
I think currently, right, I mean, it's when you said don't tell people it's about a blockchain, that's the opposite of what most companies do.
I know what you're saying, and when I was saying it, there was a bit of a paradox there or a bit of a contradiction there. When any kind of important new technology comes in, people want to talk about it, whether it's a telephone or whether it's, you know, whether it's electric lighting in houses, and there's all sorts of stuff about how does it work and is it dangerous, and you know, people didn't want to wire their houses for years because they thought it would, you know, they'd all burn down, right? Or when Edison invented the phonograph, the famous story is he you know, he couldn't find a use case for it, right? You know, the music use case for vinyl records came about towards the end. First, he thought he'd use it for, you know, transcribing speeches, and it would be, you know, it would bring transparency to government and accountability because we know what people said and all this other stuff. So you have to do that part, right? You have to get out the story. There's something new going on, and this is how it works. That's laying a foundation. That's the part I'm involved in. The part I personally care about. You're asking me more about when we're building the apps on top of it and the products on top of it. How do we deal with that? Well, then I think that the methods for doing that won't be much different than what we have now. But hopefully, your decentralized application will have properties that an equivalent application that's not decentralized doesn't, and that's going to be your story.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Makes a lot of sense. Tom, did you always want to work in communications?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I studied literature at university. So I suppose I actually never really wanted to work at all. that's really kind of where I was coming from when I got out of school. But I realized rather quickly that was not a viable life plan. So I got involved in communications, and I got involved in banking because a little bit of by accident, and a little bit of, you know, I was trained to be able to read, think a little bit, and write, and you know, that's what communications offers you. I never ever expected to get involved in banking. And that was an accident. It was a fortuitous accident in many ways. I found over the years banking to be far more interesting than I ever expected, because you're dealing with money, and money's a very interesting topic. So there's that. So I can't say I've ever expected it, but I don't regret it.
Let's assume you weren't working at Consensus Switzerland and in the communication field. What else would you like to be doing?
If I wasn't working in communications, yeah, that's a hard question because I like what I do. I suppose I wouldn't mind doing something where I could do much more long form writing. I'd write, you know, if I had my druthers, I'd probably spend my day writing books, you know, and not having to worry about getting paid for them. That's likely what I would like to do. That's what I enjoy. And who knows, the day may come. Right now, I'm happy with what I'm doing, and I find it gets more and more interesting as my career goes on. If I was going to do something else, it would be that, which is quite related to what I'm doing now.
Tom, what is there a thing that you'd like people to understand better about blockchain technology?
Maybe not better, but there's one thing I always like to keep in mind, and I think sometimes get lost when people like myself talk about it. So, I mean, I I'm in the category of the idealists of blockchain, and I'm not a technologist, right? So I have to rely on people telling me how this thing works. And I can't really tell you if it's going to work, if all these things we've talked about today are really going to happen, and if we can build these structures, nor am I going to be able to tell you that if we build them, if they'll actually function. Because it's one thing to have a flat decentralized structure for whatever the thing is you're doing. It's another thing to plug human beings into that and to see how they behave. That's a whole different discussion. So my point is that I don't want to come across as saying these things are going to happen. It is inevitable it will happen. Where I come from every day when I get up and deal with this stuff is that there are important things that I would like to see happen. And that I think are important for the world. I think we have a problem right now with centralization. We have a problem with centralization of power, with centralization of economic might. We have a problem with people losing faith in institutions who are not serving them well. And we have a problem with a very large problem with the aggregation of technological power in smaller and smaller hands. I can't tell you right now that blockchain is the answer for all of that, okay? But at least it shows a way, okay? And that's why I got into this thing, because I looked at it and I said, look, at least here we have some sort of technological background. And again, we'll go back to this basic thing of sharing trusted information, okay? And we have a lot of people with this kind of vision. And I think that's important.
That was really interesting, Tom. I learned a lot and I really enjoyed this conversation. And many thanks for taking time today.
It's always great talking to you.
Thanks so much for joining us today. More info on our guests and our sponsors is in the show notes of this episode and on the podcast website, theblockchainandus.com. To help people find this podcast, it's important that you download, subscribe, and give it a top rating and review on iTunes or on the podcast platform of your choice. I'm Manuel Staggers, and I thank you very much for listening.